Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. We have ourselves a day. Welcome to the Tuesday edition. This program is coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Rocket Mortgage is giving away millions of bucks during Super Bowl 55 with the Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes. You want to see rules and enter for free right now at RocketMortgageSquares.com. Check out that lineup. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there it is. Welcome to the program. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. You want to use it right now because we are front-loading. I've got three interviews, three really good interviews, and they're all coming up in the first half of the program. You should dial right now. I know that sounds kind of counterintuitive, right? The interviews do not start until 40 past, meaning we are open right this second. 1-800-636-8686. Follow me on Twitter. In fact, check out my Instagram story, because I have a new YouTube channel. To quote Rit, finally. We have a YouTube channel. I will tell you more about that, but if you want to know about it, check it out. I've posted the link to Twitter, and I've got a link also on my Instagram story. Hit me up at Jim Rome on both. Or you can email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at habitate.com. So the interviews look like this. And change up on you. Coming up at 9:40, a four-time world champion freestyle wrestler, one of the best to ever do it, Jordan Burroughs. That's coming up at 9:40 Pacific. Top of the hour, second hour, the head basketball coach at Minnesota, Richard Pitino. Coming up at 40 past the second hour, Packers offensive lineman Billy Turner. So we got a big day. Why don't we start with some baseball and a degenerate. On November 6th, Steve Cohen's deal to purchase the New York Mets became official. And that was billed as the start of a new era for the Mets. The old days of being a jacked up, embarrassing organization were over. Gone are the days of Mr. Met flipping off fans and little kids lighting the manager on fire.
Terry, show some emotion, you old ass, silly ass man.
Yep. Good days are coming. Everything's going to change. No, it's not. In fact, things obviously are going to get a hell of a lot worse before they get any better at all, because this morning, the Mets fired their GM, Jared Porter. And it was not part of some house cleaning that Cohen started when he bought that team. Porter was actually part of the new regime. He was supposed to be a part of the solution, not the problem. And no, he was not fired because he had not been active enough in free agency or the trade market. In fact, he was killing it there. No, he got broken off because he was too active on his cell phone. And not too active in a clickbait sort of way or addicted to Instagram sort of way. But believe this, dude could not put that phone down for any reason. How active? How active, you ask? Well, let me read the first sentence of a report from Mina Kimes and Jeff Passan that dropped last night. Here is how the piece opens, and I quote, New York Mets general manager Jared Porter sent explicit, unsolicited texts and images to a female reporter in 2016, culminating with a picture of an erect, naked penis, according to a copy of the text, history obtained by ESPN, end quote. Bam. There you have it. Right in your face.
Right in my face.
That sums it all up right there. Now, I know a lot of you probably did not want to start your day by hearing about Jared Porter's erect, naked penis. I sure as hell didn't want to start my day by talking about that. I probably should have said right off the top that this next story is graphic in nature, so you knew that going in. My bad. I'll make up for it now by letting you know it's about to get worse, so much worse, because this creep just would not stop. And let me get this out of the way right now. Mets are going to Met, and apparently that is the law of the land. It doesn't matter who owns that team or who they hire. This organization is bound and determined to find itself in the middle of one revolting incident after another. Hell, Steve Phillips can't believe a Mets GM would act this badly. So here's the next part of the report. Quote, The woman, a foreign correspondent who had moved to the United States to cover Major League Baseball, said at one point she ignored more than 60 messages from Porter before he sent the final lewd photo. End quote. 60 freaking messages and one lewd photo. Sidebar. Lewd is an amazing word. Unfortunately, it often refers to creeps pushing out unwanted personal porn. But if there's any way to get beyond that, and I'm not sure there is, lewd is a great word. It's just too bad it describes that sort of thing. Anyway, according to ESPN, Porter, who was working for the Cubs at that time, met the correspondent in an elevator at Yankee Stadium in June of 2016. It was their only in-person meeting. They exchanged business cards. They talked about international baseball prospects. And Porter, like, Porter, that's not what they mean when they say everybody should have an elevator pitch at the ready. According to the report, Porter contacted her that afternoon. And before the day was over, he texted her three times asking her out for a drink. Let me jump right in there, too. Friendly piece of advice, three times in the same day, is absurd. Obviously, it's not the most wildly inappropriate thing this creep did in the grand scheme of things, but if you're asking somebody about getting a drink three times in the same day, that's way too many. I guarantee you that person saw the first text about a drink. They don't need to see a second or a third. The reason why they haven't responded is because they don't want to get a drink, not because they didn't see the text or didn't receive the text. It's that simple. According to the woman, at one point, she did agree to meet for a drink because she thought that he was offering himself to be a source for her reporting. She couldn't meet that night, but that did not stop Porter, who sent her an unsolicited selfie with the message, like? Let me answer that question for you, J-Man. No. Unlike. In fact, hate. As with all of this stuff, if you're not getting a hell yes, then it's a hell no. But Porter, being the creep that he is, just kept right on. A few weeks later, he texted her to say, quote, why aren't we hanging out? According to ESPN, quote, Porter asked whether the woman remembered what he looked like and said, quote, you're so pretty. Do you have a boyfriend yet? He sent a selfie and said, it can be me. Again, you aren't hanging out because she doesn't want to hang out. But he wouldn't stop. Somewhere in that exchange, he sent three pics. Quote, including the first of several that would show a man lying on a bed with a bulge in his pants. End quote. Porter, dude, the hell is wrong with you? You're texting a photo of a bulge in your pants to a reporter. What's going on in your head? She's a professional, and you're sending her that crap. When the woman realized the sexual nature of his communications, she stopped returning the texts. And according to the report, this began a pattern of unsolicited messages from Porter with zero responses from the woman. 62 in total. Again, allow me to jump in here and say, if you're sending 62 messages to somebody who is not responding, that is not persistence. That's harassment. Like, I don't even care what the content of the messages are or is. Even if the messages are dong-free, and they're not, but even if they were, that's harassment. I mean, you know better, loser. But this guy was not done going full-blown degenerate. In fact, he was just getting started. He's a walking, talking Dateline to Catch a Predator episode.
How are you, sir?
Get a load of some of the messages he started to fire off. Quote, which picture do you like the most? Quote, want to see more? And then a message that was just a question mark. And then another message that was just a question mark. And then about 5 hours later, quote, hello, beautiful. About 90 minutes after that, is it too much for you? About 2 hours later, where did you go? Almost 3 hours later, at 2:03 a.m., quote, I'm bored. I mean, this loser is about to go with something like, I can't control my horny level.
I can't control my horny level.
Look, I know there are women listening right now who have received this kind of unwanted harassment. And I'm going to guess there are guys listening right now who have sent this kind of stuff. And the worst part is, the dudes who do this sort of thing are okay doing this sort of thing. And I'm telling you right now, do not think that I'm violating some bro code. Because if you're doing that crap, you're violating a moral code. Stop doing it. Again, don't confuse persistence with harassment. If Porter can't be better than this, at least you can. So here's one summary of some of the messages. Quote, the day after the woman stopped returning his text, Porter wrote, mad at me? Later that day, he sent three more pics. The first was of a World Series ring that he won during his 12 years with the Boston Red Sox, with whom he had gone from intern to pro scouting director and won three championships. The other two were bed pictures of a man's clothed groin, to which he added a message, am I annoying you? End quote. Damn it, Porter. Read the freaking room. You know if you have to ask mad at me and am I annoying you, the answer is yes. She's pissed. You're the most annoying guy ever. And he still wasn't done. Here's yet another summary of the messages. At 2:44 a.m. one day, he texted, quote, I want to see you. And then according to ESPN, quote, 7 hours later, he wrote, do you want to see me? 3 hours after that, he said, I'm sorry. At 10:59 p.m., I thought we could have some fun. And then on July 23rd, his fourth consecutive day of texting without a response, Porter wrote, I'm a nice guy, you know. Later that day, he said, was it the pictures that made you mad? That night, he sent another selfie. Dude, delete your own number. Throw away your phone. Just reading this crap is infuriating. I can only imagine what it must have been like to actually receive it. And if you feel like you need to send a message which says, I'm a nice guy, you know you're a jerk. And he still wasn't done. Because in August he texted, I'll be in LA this weekend at the best hotel in America. Can you meet me there? Yo, Jackwagon, what are you doing? She hasn't responded to you in weeks and you're inviting her to a hotel. Look, man, I don't care if you're at the Four Seasons or a Days Inn. She doesn't want to see you, ever. But he still wouldn't stop. The following day, he texted her to say, quote, you're missing out. Doubt that, Porter. And still didn't stop. He chased out with 17 photos, including one that was described in the report as an erect, naked penis. Yo, dude, are you proud of yourself? Because you shouldn't be, creep. If she hasn't responded to 60 messages, she is not playing hard to get. And if this guy couldn't have been any more Dateline to Catch a Predator, his explanation for what happened is truly moronic. When ESPN contacted him last night, he admitted texting her but denied sending the photos of himself. When told that the reporters had seen the selfies and other images, Porter said, quote, the more explicit ones are not of me. Those are like, kind of like, joke stock images.
Laugh out loud.
The oh-so-hilarious joke stock images of erect penises that everybody knows and loves. Hilarious, Chief. In other words, that dong wasn't your dong. Why didn't you just say so? Yeah, hope that was worth it, loser. Because I know it wasn't. And I know you lost your job because of it. And the fact that I had to talk about your junk or your fake junk makes me want to quit my job, which so happens to be my dream job. You know, sort of like the dream job that you just had, spent your whole life working for, and just threw away.
Loser.
I don't know. Maybe Porter got his baseball GM mind frame mixed up somehow with his social cues. You know what I'm saying? You know, that whole make the deal at all costs? That whole it's not how many no's, it's how many yeses, and all you need is that one big yes scenario? Yeah, well, that might apply to improving your ball club, but socially, it makes you a degenerate creep. She's not an assistant GM or an advanced scout. You aren't trying to Jedi mind trick the Brewers into giving you Yelich for a bunch of AAA lifers. You're not building out your farm system. Man, you're ruining and tormenting a poor journalist's life, jackass. Hey, yo, if you're bored at 2:30 in the morning, take a sleeping pill. If you're texting out pics of your big unit, it better be Randy Johnson.
Hey.
What? No cameras, man. No
cameras. What is that? What is that?
No cameras.
Get out of my face. That's all I ask.
Not the truth.
Don't be out of my face.
Yeah, again, I know you didn't want to start your day hearing that. I sure as hell didn't want to start my day talking about that. Unfortunately, I have a job to do. He used to, but not anymore. Mets gonna Met. In addition to all of that, I know it's a lot to ask, clones. Try and be responsible with that one. I want to talk some more about Andy Reid and his play call on 4th-and-1. He's doubled back now and explained the philosophy behind it, which is absolutely Andy Reid to the nth degree. It's so awesome. And more thoughts on why Eric Bieniemy cannot get a job. I've got some NBA notes. Adam Gase is getting a look, apparently, from the Seattle Seahawks. Why that is, I have no idea at all. And I'm going to change up on you. We're going to talk freestyle wrestling at 40 past. Jordan Burroughs, one of the absolute best to ever do it, joins me then. Richard Pitino, top of hour number two. Billy Turner in hour number two. We've got a brand new YouTube channel, which you can watch. It's live. I'll tell you how to find it. And your telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Now, you can rain out baseball. You can rain out tennis. You can rain out golf. The one thing you cannot rain out, life. Sometimes, no matter how hard it is coming down out there, no matter how hard it's coming down, you got to get in the car and you got to brave the elements. You have to get to the people who need you. This is why you need windshield wipers that you can trust. You need wipers from Bosch. Rated by Fortune as 2020's number one auto parts supplier, Bosch makes high-performance windshield wipers that handle the harshest weather conditions so you can reach life's important moments. See what matters most with Bosch.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Sunday on CBS, a spot in Super Bowl 55 is the prize. Buffalo Bills taking on the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. We get you ready for the game starting at 6 Eastern and 3 Pacific with JB and the fellas on the NFL Today. AFC Championship game, Sunday on CBS. Bills Mafia. All right, so you've had some time to think about this. How you feeling about things? You're going to Kansas City. Still no word about Patrick Mahomes. It seems like if you track these types of things, the odds makers think that he's going to play. Why do I say that? Because they are three-point favorites. They would not be three-point favorites if Chad Henne were starting. If Andy Reid came out right now and said, Henne's my guy, I'm going with Chad Henne, they would not be three-point favorites. So clearly, the odds makers seem to think that Patrick Mahomes is going to make it back in time from protocol to starting that game. I do not know. I know what the criteria is. I know what tests he has to pass between now and then to be ready. I'm not sure whether or not he will be ready this weekend, but the odds makers seem to think so because I'm looking at that spread. How do you feel about your chances? Hey, Chiefs fan, if you've got to go with Henne, as good as he was, if you have to go with him, how do you feel about your chances? And then on the NFC side, Aaron Rodgers always talks about how he wants that NFC championship game at Lambeau. He's got it. An old man, TB43, is coming to town. So two great, great matchups. And I will not be at Arrowhead for this one, which in a sense I would love to be. But on the other side, I'm still not right from being at Arrowhead a year ago. Damn, that was cold. I used to think the single coldest day of my life was the NFC Championship game in 1996 in Green Bay. That is until I went to Arrowhead last year. I'll never forget coming off that field, and I'm in a golf cart going back to the building after I've done my hit. And the security woman turns around, and she looks at me, and she says, and I quote, "Sir, are you all right?" And I got defensive. I'm like, why do you ask? Because you don't look all right, sir. You know why? Because I'm not all right, man. I think I've got hypothermia. It's cold. It gets cold. So why do I bring that up? I wonder about Brady. Sure. He played 20 years in Foxborough. We're talking about the Tampa Bay Bucks going to Lambeau. Lambeau's going to be cold. Really cold. Yeah, I've never bought this whole mind over matter bull crap. Man, when it's that cold, it's that cold. It's going to affect you. Unless you live and work in the environment, in those elements. So that's going to be a really interesting game. I said, if you can handle the topic responsibly, we can get into this. Let's find out. Rome, 62 messages with no response? Sounds like a good start to me. Signed, where's my hug guy? Stephen PHX. Rome, the stock penis pics is the best excuse I've heard in a while. Are we to expect that he has a stock penis pic folder stored away to fire off at 2 a.m.? Best excuse since Royd Landis blamed whiskey for his positive PED test. Damasio in Albuquerque. I mean, are we really surprised that a guy like that, a creep like that, a degenerate like that would go with something like that? Oh, the bulge shots. Yeah, not my bulge. Those are stock penis pics. Oh, you mean you just went online and you pulled them from somebody else and presented them as your own? Oh, that changes everything. Yeah, that or nothing at all, creep. Another good word, creep. Dear Jim, even we think Porter's junk was unsightly. Signed, UPS trucks. Drew in West LA. Unwore big, clunky, poop brown UPS trucks clogging up the street. Oh, you mean those guys that are working their asses off delivering you packages that you need? Rome Slice. I like Jared Porter style. That dude's not creep at all. Regards, the tool at the Christmas party with mistletoe attached to his belt buckle. Geoff and Lincoln. Unwore Porter using Axe body spray on his dong before heading to... All right, that's enough. Geoff. Hey, Geoff, take the rest of the day off. Take the rest of the week off. You know what, Geoff? You can listen to the show but never participate ever again. How about that? Listen. Serious offense. It cost this creep his job. Again, there's persistence and then there's harassment. Read the room, idiot. Rome, we see nothing wrong with the Mets GM's behavior. Regards, Jeffrey Toobin, Steve Phillips, Anthony Weiner, Matt Lauer, and Charlie Rose. Again, point of this, aside from this guy's an absolute creep, and now his reputation is shot and he lost his dream job, the thing he worked his whole life for. It was supposed to be the start of a new era with the Mets. They were going to clean house, get some of that stink off that franchise. You know, when you think of Mets, what do you think? You think embarrassment, you think depressing, revolting. But they have new ownership. It was all going to change. Same as they ever were. And getting worse before it gets better. This guy's Twitter handle is, "Come on, Jared!" Quote, "If you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Jared Porter."
If you're getting ready for work right now, then you're probably not Doug Collins.
Lava. This guy tags his tweet with unwore dopes named Jared, giving me a bad name.
Come on, Jared!
And again, his Twitter handle is, "Come on, Jared!
Come on, Jared!"
Hey, Jim, 62 unreplied messages. That's the equivalent of Lawrence waiting on hold for 3 weeks and not getting on the air. Both of these clowns need to get a freaking clue on being ghosted. Kenny and Scotty, he's got a point. Take a hint, both of you. Rome, I really like that Mets GM style of hitting on chicks. Regards, Brett Favre. And finally, dear Jared Porter, welcome to the club. Signed, the old gunslinger and Anthony Weiner.
Let's go.
Chris no longer in St. Pete. Wore the same old damn Mets. Welcome to the park. Wore the crank counter. There is no such counter. You can't war something that does not exist.
Crank!
Man, what a dirtbag. When we return, we begin the interview portion of the program. We've got a four-time world champion freestyle wrestler, Jordan Burroughs, coming up next. Top of the hour, Richard Pitino. Billy Turner next hour. And I do want to tell you about...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
What's cracking? Welcome back. Tremendous Tuesday to you. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live. I'm in Southern California. And again, next hour, busy hour, I've got the head basketball coach at Minnesota, Richard Pitino. I've got a lineman for the Green Bay Packers, Billy Turner. Right now, though, as promised, we're joined by an Olympic gold medalist wrestler. He is a four-time world champion, second American wrestler in history to win three world or Olympic gold medals in a row, one of just two American wrestlers to win three or more world championships, a two-time national champ in Nebraska, winner of three Big 12 titles, winner of the Hodge Trophy. He's also a member of the Bills Mafia. He's Jordan Burroughs. Jordan, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jim. Thanks for the invitation, man. I appreciate it. It's good
Jordan,
to be here.
Great to talk to you. Great to have you on the program. Listen, there's so much I want to talk to you about, Jordan, but before we go anywhere else, I want to ask you about the Buffalo Bills, because this is a big Buffalo Bills house. I know you're a big Bills fan. How did you first get into the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, wild, man. So I grew up in South Jersey, right outside of Philly. And so my parents were always longtime Eagles fan, but you know, just a little resistant to the in-house sports team product. So I was a Denver Broncos fan as a kid. All those, you know, great teams in 97 and 98. But when I was courting my current wife, I realized that I wanted to be involved with a program that wasn't just based on geography. My wife's from Buffalo, New York. Her uncle actually is Thurman Thomas. And so I got to meet, well, we call him Uncle Thurm. Spent a lot of time with Thurman Thomas. He brought me into the fold, introduced me to the coaching staff. I've talked to the Bills organization numerous times. I text back and forth with Coach McDermott. And so it is a special relationship that I have with the Bills, and it's really a hometown team. And so whenever we're back in Buffalo, we always try to connect with the Bills, and we have some friends that work in an organization as well. And, yeah, man, it's been a great team to root for. They represent most of what American society looks like. They're gritty, they're tough, they're working class, and I think they are America's team. I know the Cowboys are considered America's team, but they represent the working class of America, and that's why I'm happy to be a Bills fan.
My man, I agree with everything you just said, except for that last part about America's team, because I lost to Cleveland. And don't get this twisted. I mean, I love the Bills. I love that town. I love that organization. I love that team, except I've been calling the Cleveland Browns America's team for the last part of 2 years now, but pretty much for the same reasons you just mentioned. I mean, that's amazing. Jordan Burroughs, my guest, the way he laid that whole thing out. Sunday also, you tweeted, quote, "It seems as if most NFL players with wrestling backgrounds are linemen. What other football positions do former wrestlers gravitate towards?" And I'd like to know just how many NFL players also wrestled in high school. Like, so when you're watching football, especially offensive and defensive linemen, what are you seeing that looks familiar to you?
For sure. So I think that what translates well for linemen specifically is the hand fight. So knowing how to stand up an opponent, knowing how to move an opponent, in order to either, you know, get through them, get them underneath of you, keep them off of your quarterback, or get to their quarterback. I think that's a really big part of wrestling. Is it's almost like boxing. You have to know how to move your body, control positional awareness, using your hands to really control the body of your opponent. But also, I think that what I've seen a lot lately, and you think that would translate better, would be the tackling ability. Every time I see a double leg in football or a standard tackle, I'm like, man, this looks so much like wrestling. And so I think that what I could help to do, or if more football players were interested in the sport and really kind of use that as cross training, is just the standard double leg in wrestling looks almost identical to a tackle with good form. Hands behind your running back or wide receiver's thighs, making sure that your head's up and in, making sure that, you know, you have a strong head and strong neck, and then running the guy down and driving him to the ground. So I think wrestling translates well because we're tough. We work hard. We're able to just be in intimate settings where we're so close to our opponent, and it just it makes for good action. And so it's fun to see all the wrestlers go on to be good football players. Listen, I was really – my senior year of high school, I weighed 135 pounds. So although I had supreme tackling skills, I never had the size to be in the NFL. So I think that's why linemen transition most, is because they have the skill set, but they also have the size and the frame to do well. So, you know, I think if you ask the average high school wrestler, would they rather play in the NFL or would they, you know, rather wrestle? I think most of them would say play in the NFL, but I think that, you know, wrestling, because of weight classes, the smallest weight class being 103 pounds and the largest being heavyweight, there's not many of us who can actually transition to the NFL. So it's cool to see the linemen actually do it.
Jordan Burroughs joining us. Now, anytime an Olympic wrestler comes on the program, I hear from a ton of fans of the sport. Like, as you go back, when you were 5 years old, you just got started in that sport. How did you first get into wrestling?
Yeah, so I was a big fan of the WWE or WWF at that time, right? So I used to watch a lot of guys, Macho Man, Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan, The Ultimate Warrior, Edge and Christian, The Brood, like all these guys, those were my guys. And so with my cousin Tyler, we spent a lot of time strolling the aisles of Walmart and Target looking for action figures from the WWF. We had a ring. We had all the video games. We watched SmackDown and Raw and SummerSlam and WrestleMania, all these things that like we were wrestling gurus. And so when I finally got an opportunity to do it, I was like, man, is this going to be like what I see on TV? Am I going to be able to jump off the top ropes and do a frog splash and slam through people through tables? So I thought that was really cool. But when I got to the local gymnasium at my town's high school and saw that there were just wrestling mats laid out and you had to wear a singlet and headgear, it was much different than what I expected. But I was the youngest of four in the run of my family. So wrestling was one of the few sports you didn't have to be big in stature to be successful because of the weight classes. And I was scrappy young man, and I was competitive right away. And I won my very first tournament. I didn't even win the tournament, but I got a participation trophy. And that's what kind of hooked me, is I got the chance to like have a tangible piece of evidence from a competition, and I was hooked. My dad would take me to the trophy room before every tournament. He'd show me all the trophies, say, son, you see that big trophy over there, the tallest one in the room? That's for the guy that wins first place. That's if you win all your matches today. So that was kind of what motivated me as a kid. And, you know, 25 years later, I'm still at it. Trophies have gotten a little smaller, but the stakes have gotten higher, and it's still a fun time for me.
Jordan Burroughs is joining us. So then you go to Nebraska, and you had a challenging freshman year, but then over the next 3 years, you went 1-11-6, and then you go on an absolute tear. You're ripping off NCAA championships, the U.S. Open, then the World Championships in 2011, and then in 2012, you go to London for the Olympics. What do you remember about the experience of winning a gold medal?
There's nothing like it, Jim. There's really nothing like it. Wrestling, the pinnacle of our sport is the Olympic gold. We don't have a championship season, you know, much like you see in the NFL with the playoffs. So it was something that I had dreamed about for a long time, but to actually have it and feel it was something completely different. I had never even seen or touched an Olympic gold medal until it was actually placed around my neck. Mm. And so that was the first one I'd ever seen, standing on top of the podium, watching the American flag being raised high with my hand over top of my heart. And just standing there, I'm like, man, I did this. I remember watching the Olympics in Atlanta and Sydney and Athens, and, you know, thinking like, man, how cool would that be to be there? And then to actually be there, and not only be there and participate, but to win it, it's indescribable. It was a lot of fun.
Jordan Burroughs joining us. So then, Jordan, you keep on dominating, and then you go to Rio, and things don't work out as well as you would have hoped. You lose in the quarterfinals, and then you said some really interesting things about the experience. Like, you go to Rio to win, and that's the only outcome on your mind, and then it doesn't happen. And then you made the point you had to go about rebuilding yourself mentally and psychologically. How did you do that, and what was that process like? What were the types of things you were dealing with emotionally?
Yeah, it was a dark time. I think one of the hardest things about being a professional athlete is your failures are public. The average person, if something happens to them, no one really knows about it. But for us, people are watching it. People are in the stands with their camera phones, and you're publicly crucified. And so it's a very difficult time. You have to rebuild your identity separate from your occupation. Everyone calls you the champ, or everyone knows who you are and what you do, and you're heralded as this hero. But when you get beat, you know, you have like this scarlet letter and the stigma where everyone's like, man, I'm so sorry that things didn't work out for you. So to rebuild, I had to really just reevaluate my goals. I had to rebuild my confidence, be, you know, confident in my abilities, knowing what I could do moving forward. But I had to cling closely to my team and have a lot of faith moving forward, because I knew that it was going to be hard going in front of my contemporaries and all my peers once again. And, you know, knowing that I didn't perform to the best of my ability, it was tough. It was humiliating and embarrassing. But I got a great team of people. I got a great wife. Everyone encouraged me and pumped me up, told me I was still great. I could still do it. I still had opportunities ahead of me, and that the best years of my competition were still in front of me. And so just dug down deep and just got back to it and just ignored the critics and stopped reading the forums and stopped listening to what analysts had to say about my performance and just started believing in myself. And things worked out for me.
I love it. Jordan Burroughs joining us. Of course, Jordan, the question always comes up with wrestlers, and that's whether or not they can make the transition to MMA. There are so many guys who've done it and done it really well, actually. How much consideration have you even given to making a move to MMA? Is it a possibility?
A ton, bro. A ton. Listen, I follow Conor McGregor on Instagram. I see him pull up with a new Rolex and a Bentley, you know, driving of Lamborghini to practice, and, you know, riding a yacht into Abu Dhabi to Fight Island. I'm like, damn, I should have fought. And so it's an interesting dynamic, because, you know, I think I could really translate well. Most of the champions in MMA are former wrestlers. Kamaru Usman, Henry Cejudo, John Jones, Daniel Cormier, all these guys were great wrestlers, and I was teammates and trained alongside them guys. So I was like, if they could do it, I could do it. But it's a different sport. It's a completely different sport, and I have so much appreciation and admiration for those guys, but I love wrestling. Wrestling's my craft, and it's what I've honed on into. It's not as sexy, not as glamorous. You don't make as much money, but I think what we do is all about honor, and that's what makes it cool for me. So, you know, I'm a big fan of MMA, but at the end of the day, I love wrestling, number one, and number two, I just don't want to get punched in the face, bro. Like, it's such a different... If you lose, you got taken down. You might got put into your back and pinned. But if you get beat in a fight, you got choked out, tapped out, someone's broken something. Wrestling match, you lose, you go to have dinner with your family. If you lose an MMA fight, you go to the hospital.
Jordan, that is such a great response. You know, when you said that there's a nobility in wrestling and then there's honor in that, I mean, absolutely, 100%. And I don't think those things are necessarily mutually exclusive. I'm sure you'd agree. Like, Daniel Cormier is one of the classiest guys ever awesome. In any walk of life. What do you think, like, to your point about, yeah, it's not an easy way to make a living, getting punched in the face and kneed in the face. What's it say about the breed? What's it say about the breed of athlete that it takes to step into the octagon? Can you even explain what that's like for the fans who are so into it but have no idea the price that's being paid?
Yeah, for sure. I think it takes a certain level of fearlessness, and I don't necessarily say fearlessness. It's bravery. No one is absent of fear. Everyone's scared. Everyone's nervous. Everyone's anxious when that gate closes behind you and you step into that octagon with the person across from you wanting to kill you. But I think that there's a certain level of courage and bravery that it takes to get in there, because you know what you're made of, and you know what you're willing to display to the world. And so when you step into that ring, you want to put on a show for the fans, and you want to display all of the skills that you've been, you know, honing and spending hours sacrificing to, you know, to craft. And I think that's what's really special about the MMA world, is these guys are real athletes. This is no longer the early stages of the UFC where these guys are just random brawlers that they pick out of a bar to go in there and fight bare knuckle. These guys are high-level professional athletes that are training with the professionals in every single field. And so, you know, I think I liken it to like heptathletes and decathletes and track and field, where these people are masters of every single craft, from wrestling to jiu-jitsu to judo, you know, to kickboxing. They do such a tremendous job. And, you know, I think that it's a new breed of athlete. People are going to start to grow up and train specifically to be fighters, not to be, you know, wrestlers or boxers or go to the NFL or NBA. They are going to train specifically to go to the UFC. And so it's a new generation of fighters that are going to be coming up soon, but it takes a lot of bravery to do what they do. And that's why I'm a huge fan of it. They're good men. in that sport, good women in that sport, and great athletes.
Extremely well said. And this is why, to my point, everybody loses, like, well, except for maybe Habib, but everybody loses because of the multitude of disciplines. There are so many different ways to get caught. Really quickly, Jordan, what's the rest of your schedule look like for 2021? How does the year shape up for you?
Yeah, so I have seen that there was a statement from the Japanese Prime Minister just recently that he still wants to hold the Olympic Games. So the Olympics from 2020, Tokyo, Japan, were postponed to the summer of 2021. And so right now, that's what we're continuously preparing for. Our Olympic trials, which is our qualification process for the Olympic Games, happens in April. I'll be wrestling there. If I win there, best 2 out of 3 against my opponent, I'll be on the U.S. Olympic team at 74 kilograms or 163 pounds. And I'll get to compete in August of 2021 for my chance to win a second Olympic gold medal. So super exciting times for myself and my family and my teammates. And we are just training, getting my weight down, getting ready for the Olympic trials, and hopefully going out there and putting on the show.
My guy, what a great conversation. He's already got the gold medal. He's a 4-time world champion, second American wrestler in history to win 3 world or Olympic gold medals in a row, Jordan Burroughs. Jordan, so great to have you on the show. You nailed that. Great to talk to you, and I hope we can do it again soon.
Yes, sir. Jim, thank you.
Appreciate that so much, Jordan. What a great interview that was. So if you're a fan of wrestling, and I know you are because every time we have an Olympic wrestler on, I get a lot of reaction. Go ahead, hit me up. You know where to find me. Telephone number's toll free. Hit me up on social media. When we come back, the head basketball coach at Minnesota, Richard Pitino, and then I've got an open segment right after that. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Stay tuned.